Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the committee to order. Thank you very much. First order of business on the agenda is approval of the minutes of our January 23rd meeting. Representative Carlson moves approval. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. This afternoon, members, we have Commissioner Franz before us to review the property and local tax dimensions of the governor's budget proposal. My intent is to limit discussion to that proposal. There originally had been an idea that we would then go on and accept public testimony, but I've gotten comments from several folks who likely have opinions on the governor's budget that it makes more sense to wait until there's actual language before the committee for them to come in and testify. And as I've explained to members of the public in the past, we don't actually talk about ideas here. We actually talk about language. And I recall my previous committee where we spent a vibrant half an hour discussing and versus or in one sentence in a bill, and it was a legitimate, real conversation. And it drove most of us crazy, but it was a legitimate, real conversation. So if we are able to get through the governor's budget presentation today, we will not have to meet tomorrow, which is always an added treat around here. With that, Commissioner, welcome to the Property Tax Division. Thank you very much for taking time out of a busy day, including you got through the Senate committee, I understand, with a little blessing there. On to the full Senate now. But welcome to the committee, and please proceed, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your presentation.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Myron Franz, Commissioner of Revenue for the state of Minnesota. With me is Eric Ouellette, the Director of our Property Tax Research. Thank you for your kind words, and I do appreciate the action by the Senate. It was a very honor to be approved by the Senate committee. What I will do in order to get to the heart of the matter here, I'm just going to do a very, very brief introduction and then get right away into the elements of the property tax elements. And then what we'll do is, after I sort of explain the major pieces, then Eric will walk through some of the data specifically about the LGA formula so we can get into that. Because we really want to make sure you all have time to take a look at this and ask questions. So the task that we had, like I said, I'll just take a minute to open this up. The task that we had in terms of the governor's direction and coming up with a budget and a tax reform proposal was to solve the ultimate problem. The ultimate problem being a $1.1 billion deficit, the making investments in Minnesota in education and healthcare and infrastructure, and also solving the long-term structural problems so that we would not have a deficit in the next biennium. So this budget proposal, which the property tax components are a part of, really do those things. They solve the budget, make investments, and provide for a surplus in the next biennium sufficient to pay back the school debt. So the debts are paid back. The key here for the in terms of developing the revenue system that would support that budget was to make one that's fair and balanced and provides an opportunity for Minnesotans to share equally in our tax burden. And that was the challenge for property taxes. As many of you have heard, and I've visited with some of you out on the road this last year, we've been to a lot of different communities, and one of the overriding concerns that I heard, and I'm sure you've heard too, is the over-reliance on property taxes over the last decade. We've seen an 86% increase in property taxes, and we've seen people around the state being concerned about the over-reliance on property taxes. In fact, a lot of us have had the personal experience in the last several years where our values have been going down in terms of property values, and yet our taxes, property taxes have been going up. So this decade-long continuing rise in property taxes is a real concern. In 1999, of the three sources of revenue, property tax was only 30% back in 1999. Sales tax and income tax made up the other 70%. In 2010, property taxes became 40% of those three sources of revenue. And so one of the goals that the governor had in mind was to provide direct and immediate property tax relief for Minnesotans. And that is why the proposal contains a $500 rebate to all homeowners in Minnesota. The provision operates such that all homeowners in Minnesota, including farmstead owners, would file their income tax return in 2014, and there'll be a line on that form to claim a property tax rebate of up to $500. The language provides that 100% of the property tax liability will be refunded up to a maximum of $500. And that continues thereafter. In addition to the property tax rebate of $500 for every homeowner, which there are about 1.5 million homeowners in Minnesota, would also be property tax relief for businesses. As many of you know, the businesses pay a statewide property tax in addition to local property taxes. The statewide property tax for businesses is about 30% of a typical business property tax bill. The provision that the governor promotes in his proposal is that we would freeze the increase for the next 2 years. So what happens with property taxes, the statewide business property tax, is every year it's increased by inflation. So the proposal would be in 2014 and 2015, there would be no increase at all. There'd be zero increase due to inflation. And then beginning in 2016, the inflation rate would be cut in half. So there would be both immediate temporary relief through the freeze and long-term relief through the permanent reduction in the inflation adjustment going forward. I believe the amount of the property tax relief would be about, for businesses, would be about $120 million through 2017. The property tax on businesses would provide an opportunity to put some stop on the increasing property taxes for businesses, especially small businesses. So it's really those are the two major components in terms of providing direct property tax relief: the $500 rebate to all homeowners and the freeze on the statewide business property tax and the reduction in the long-term property tax going forward. The property tax rebate of $500 to each homeowner would constitute about a 22% reduction in homeowner property taxes around the state. The other portion that I want to mention, although it's not part of the governor's proposal, is the effect on the two property tax refund mechanisms that we currently have in law. As you know, we have two programs that provide a release or a relief mechanism for property taxes. The first one is the homeowners property tax relief program, refund program based on income. And if you have a certain level of property taxes based on your income, you can receive a property tax rebate or refund. In addition, there's a renter's refund credit as well for renters that are based on the formula that we've determined that constitutes the amount of property tax they pay as part of their rent. And in addition, based on income, you can get a refund there as well. The governor recommends that these two programs continue in their current form and would fully fund those without any changes in those two programs. The next portion that I want to get to, and I'll let Mr. Ouellette talk here in just a moment, and that is the local government aid and the county program aid. The last piece of this property tax proposal is to increase the investment in local government aid by $80 million for city program aid in 2014 and thereafter, and $40 million for county program aid beginning in 2014 and thereafter. It is our belief that the cities and counties, local units of government, have really had a difficult time the last 10 years as we've all struggled both at the national level, the state level, and even in our own personal lives. We've struggled with the challenges of two recessions, especially the most recent recession. We've seen a real decrease in the amount of money and funding that's been sent down to the local units of government. They've had to endure these budget cuts. They've had to c- cut services. They've had to increase property taxes in some situations. So one of the reasons that the governor felt really compelled to make this proposal was to make sure that we invest in cities and communities. Once again, based on need, we'll go over a little bit more about the factors and the formula in terms of how that need is distributed based upon the need that we've determined through a formula and also based upon the inability of some jurisdictions to have a property tax base that actually provides enough revenue to support those needs. So these all of the property tax components begin in 2014 with the property tax rebate beginning in 2014 to homeowners, the local government aid and county program aid being increased in 2014, and the statewide business property tax being implemented, the freeze in 2014. I think at this time, unless there are questions before we get into a general discussion about the local government aid, we can get into the formula and some of the background in terms of how we came up with that proposal, Mr. Chair.
You know, Commissioner, whenever you ask if there are questions emerge. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Franz, just a couple questions of clarification. First, regarding the issue of the $500 rebate to property taxpayers, is it my understanding that that is a one-time rebate, that's not a perpetual rebate? And secondly, when you mention there are 1.5 million property taxpayers, are those unique specific property tax IDs, or are there in fact an anticipated 1.5 million residential homesteads that will receive this benefit?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, there are in fact, we estimate about 1.5 homeowners that would actually receive the $500 rebate or 100% of their tax liability up to $500. So those are the numbers that we actually estimate that would be in the property tax proposal. It is an ongoing program. The governor was really concerned that we don't do any one-time shifts, that we wanted to make a permanent reduction in property taxes in this state, and this is an ongoing program that would continue beginning in 2014.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second question relates to that regarding business property. With the general property tax levy currently in place, and you mentioned that it would be frozen, I would like to have you clarify the formulation of how that is applied, because if in fact we are emerging from a recession and if property values start to recover, will these business owners in fact see an increase in the general property tax levy based on increased value?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, one of the issues that we've looked and examined quite carefully is the interplay of market values that change over time. As we all know, during this last decade, we've seen some increases in property taxes initially in values, both values and taxes, but also we've seen some decreases in values. The property tax freeze for the statewide business property tax freeze would only adjust that portion that of the rate, and so whatever the value change would be reflected in the both the local property taxes and in the tax rate applied to that entity. So this only deals with the rate, not with the fair market value.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. And the last question regarding your opening statements about the proportion of property tax as revenue to the overall revenue. As a past mayor, we know that about 93 to 95% of most smaller towns and cities rely on the property tax levy for about 93, 95% of their budgets. And in a time of recession, thank goodness for the property tax levy, because that's the most stable of the revenue sources. Obviously, when we're in a recession, income goes down, so do tax collections as a result of that income going down, as well as sales tax receipts go down. So to say that in 2010 the property taxes have increased and represent 40% of the revenue, I would argue that, in fact, the other revenues are down.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think one of the things that you, when we examine the relationship of the property tax, the income tax, and the sales tax in relation to one another over the years, clearly they change every year, and they change every year based on economics and property value and whatnot. But it's been a clear trend since 1999 to see the ever-increasing property tax in terms of more and more reliance on that as a source of revenue. So our concern has been that by not adjusting or being upfront about some of these other taxes, income taxes or sales taxes, that we've let the pressure slide more and more and more to property taxes. So the citizens around the state, both in terms of talking to the governor and to me, were very adamant about the fact that not only is the trend disturbing to them personally, but also the sheer volume or the sheer magnitude of property taxes. So the response to the property tax rebate of $500 to homeowners and to businesses was really one of trying to recognize that this is a not just a perceived problem, but a real problem with Minnesotans, and we wanted to address that as directly as we could. And I think the other thing that we have to realize, as you mentioned, that these things do change in relationship over time based on economics, and clearly that's one of the reasons why we think it's smart in terms of Minnesota to rely on three sources of revenue and not just two or one. I mean, obviously South Dakota relies on two. They have the sales tax and they have the property tax. And so we believe that stability and predictability and sustainability are enhanced by making sure that the relative values and the relative importance of these taxes stay fairly close to one another over time. And that is one of the reasons why, you know, in the next biennium, we think there's enough revenue not only to have a surplus, but also to pay back the entire school shift. So we look at these three taxes in relation to one another, and you're right, they change over time based on economic factors, and they change every year, but we think the balance is appropriate, and the balance is important, and that's one of the things we're trying to achieve.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little confused on the statewide business property tax. I need a little clearer answer on just how that operates, and if you could clarify that, because my understanding was that there's a statewide business property tax raises a set amount of money, and that the relative values do not change the amount of money raised. Is that not correct?
Mr. Willett, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Eric Willett from the Department of Revenue. Representative Torkelson, you're correct. The statewide business tax is a dollar amount levy that is spread on the taxable commercial industrial tax base throughout the state. So under the proposal, under current law, that levy grows by the rate of inflation each year, and it is spread on all the business taxpayers in the state each year. So if the amount of business tax base is growing faster than the rate of inflation, then the tax per dollar value on businesses is going to go down. What the proposal does is it halts that increase in the levy for 2 years, and then it makes future increases smaller than they are under current law. So an individual business, if their value is growing more quickly than the average value of businesses around the state, their portion of that state levy will grow, and the other business's portion will get smaller, but it will raise that total dollar amount that is set in statute. Does that answer the question?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. I believe that's much more clear. So you're eliminating the inflator clause for just 2 years, and then you're going to go back to this system of where we continuously raise the amount of property tax raised on the backs of our job providers automatically, no matter what's happening to the economy. Is that correct?
Mr. Willett?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the proposal is that after the two-year freeze, it will be, the business levy will increase by half the rate of inflation. So it will still grow, but it will grow half as quickly as under current law.
And it
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it grows every year. You have a two-year, I don't know what you call it, but a two-year pause in this inflation, and then you're reducing the amount, but it's still going to increase automatically.
That's correct.
Mr. Rabat.
Thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner. Heard your statements now several times, of course, in the press as well. I really think that these, first of all, claims regarding the tax relief for corporations and our businesses, pretty overblown. I mean, I think if this number is right, when all is said and done, there's actually a $5 million increase to businesses as a result of all of the interactions of the different changes. So really that's non-existent, okay? That one seems to me to be just a talking point. Also, with regard to the property taxes, 86%, I keep hearing 86% increases. And I think it's kind of a function of how you've started the numbers. You know, if you look at 2001, we had about $5.1 billion in property taxes that year. Then it went down due to the big overhaul in 2001. So really, if you start at $5 million, go on up, you really look at a more like 60% increase over a decade. So just to make sure you know that, I think,
Commissioner,
you know,
folks ought to know. Commissioner, I'm hearing two questions there, then one.
No, I'm making comments, Mr.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought these were questions, Representative Runbeck.
And then I think, first of all, residential homeowners in Minnesota, I mean, we rank about 28th in terms of residential property taxes. You know, we do pretty well at this stage before the changes that you're making. So my view is that this is really an effort to increase spending and increase government. I don't think you're doing much at all to reform what's going on in property taxes. This is no reform. This is just more of a license to spend. But I would point you to the trend in spending then. For property taxes over the last 10 years, really when the growth in property taxes was the smallest was when government was subsidizing local governments to the smallest degree. So you had 1%, 1.9%, 2.1% increases in those years when, in fact, yeah, revenues were limited and local governments were, you know, were required to live within their means. We got reforms. We got a lot of good changes going on. And I think it's the start of something, and I think you're absolutely turning it around and saying, look, we're just going to dump more money because that's what's been, you know, the pattern. So that's my comment. I guess it's a comment.
Commissioner.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, well, thank you for your comments. I think one of the things I'd like to respond in terms of making it clear about the property tax rebate and why it's so important. And whether it's 60% or 80%, I think one thing is crystal clear across Minnesota, and that is Minnesotans want some property tax relief and feel that we need to have some property tax relief. And I think the property tax rebate of $500 to each homeowner, and in addition, the property tax relief for the statewide business property tax are direct relief components that provide property tax relief to both homeowners and to business owners. And so I think if you feel that that is not a proper way to address the concerns of Minnesotans, there are certainly other things we can do. But one of the things that the governor has made clear is that if we're going to have a system where we can balance the budget, pay for investments, and also pay back the school shift, we're going to have to make sure that people are committed to that system. And property taxes can be one of the most unfair taxes in the sense that property taxes can go up without regard to your income going up or down or without regard to your business income going up or down. So there's a real sense that among the people in this state that property taxes have been relied upon too long, and we need to make a direct attempt and a direct plan to lower those property taxes in a way that's meaningful, that's direct, and provides property tax relief to a broad base of Minnesotans. And so this program that the governor proposes has to be looked at as a package. It's not just the property taxes. It's the income tax. It's the sales tax. It's the corporate income tax. They all together solve the budget problem, make investments in Minnesota, pay back the school shift, and balance the budget for this biennium and the next biennium. And I think the property tax rebate component of $500 for each homeowner is a very important part of that component or package.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Runbeck.
Follow up, please. I mean, I think what we're seeing is we're raising the income tax to subsidize, you know, property taxes, which, of course, is what's been done for decades. But raising the income tax is the most unstable source of income, and here we hear this is all about stability, but really you're actually raising a piece of the puzzle that is the most volatile, that is the most subject to the roller coasters that you like to talk about. To me, that doesn't seem very responsible.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, income taxes have not been raised over the last decade. In fact, they were lowered in 1999 and 2000. At that point, the highest income tax rate in Minnesota was 8.5%. It was
Mr.
reduced.
Chair, I think you're missing.
Representative Runbeck, let's let the commissioner complete his statement.
Missing my point, but.
Well, then we can get back to that, but let's let him miss your point before.
Okay.
But before we can confront him for missing your point.
I can miss the point with the best of them.
All right.
But the point being that the income tax, regardless of whether it's the most volatile or not, doesn't mean that you don't try to enhance it, make it more, generate more revenue in a more fair way. So I think one of the issues in the income taxes is the rate reduction in 1999 and 2000. If we had not lowered the rate back in those in that decade, we would have generated another $11 billion over the last decade or so. But the point in terms of property taxes going up or going down, and the package of what the income tax portion of the package, you know, I think the important thing is that we're making investments, and what does this buy? And so, the real challenge I think for all of us here in Minnesota is to come up with a system that can solve the deficit, make investments in Minnesota, and solve the long-term structural problem. And how do you do that? With real investments, with real revenue. And that's what this governor has proposed, is a package with real revenue that's transparent and that's there for people to see. And if they don't like it, they can come up with another package. But this package solves the problem. So I think the challenge I want to continue to bring to all of us here is to come up with a better package that solves the overall problem.
Representative Runbeck, final comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we're raising the taxes in the most volatile areas to subsidize the most stable area, which is property tax. And furthermore, I think we're shooting our wad. I mean, when are we going to ever reduce the commercial industrial? There's nothing in this package whatsoever for our job creators. We have shot the wad with whatever $1 billion. There's nothing left now to ever think about and contemplate a serious reduction in the statewide business property tax. That's forever. When you make this move,
Commissioner,
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a direct relief in the statewide business property tax. The first one that I've seen in quite a number of years. It's real. It's in the program. It's in the package. In addition, we're making a 14% reduction in the corporate income tax rate from 9.8% down to 8.4%. That is an opportunity for more and more Minnesota businesses to pay less in the way of income tax. So I think those components are part of the overall plan. And the other really important component is the investment in education and infrastructure. If businesses have told us repeatedly around the state that you can't look at just one component, you have to look at the overall package, and they expect Minnesota to invest in education and infrastructure and health care as we go forward. They expect us to balance the budget. They expect us to do these things in a way that will give them confidence that Minnesota is a great state and a great state to invest in. So it's not all about the taxes. It's about the spending in terms of where the investments are going, and it's about balancing the budget. So it's that overall package that we're proposing to businesses that make Minnesota a great state and a great state to invest in.
Representative Groffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, first of all, good to see you again. Second of all, thank you for being an adult and sitting and answering questions before the committee. Not all commissioners do that bipartisanly, and I want to commend you and thank you for that. First question, as you know, the rebate shows up in the state income tax form, which would increase federal tax liability. Why should we spend additional state resources to raise revenue for the federal government?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the overall effect of the rebate is actually a wash on the income tax return. I'll have to get more information about that, but remember that that's part of what you're deducting the taxes that you pay in 2013, and that's part of your reduction, but then you turn around and get a credit for this rebate. So it's pretty much a wash on the federal income tax return.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Groff.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, for those who itemize their taxes, this will increase their federal tax liability. So for those in the 25% bracket, 25% of their credit will go to higher federal taxes. For those in the 15% bracket, 15% of their rebate will go to the federal government in the form of higher taxes. That's how you're familiar with how itemized taxes work. I hate to do this to you, but I'm right, aren't I?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. I mean, as a matter of fact, what happens if you itemize, you also deduct the taxes that you paid. which include property taxes. And so you both have the property tax that you paid. You pay those property taxes in 2013, and eventually you get to deduct those at one point. So when you claim the rebate, then at that point it's kind of a wash.
Mr. Chairman,
and Representative Garofalo.
Commissioner, so what you're saying is the only way that this is revenue neutral at the federal level is there would have to be $500 of additional property tax increases to offset the $500 in sales tax rebate. You can't have it both ways. If the property tax, you have an existing baseline law, and you are reducing it with a deductible, you're reducing the deductions by $500. Therefore, your taxable income is raised by $500, and whatever tax rate you are at the federal level gets increased by that level. So before I go to my next question, I just want to make sure you understand how itemized deductions work. I know you do. So I'm right that if you take itemized deductions, reduce it by $500, whatever tax bracket you're at, your federal tax liability goes up by that much.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, but before you can get credit for the rebate, you have to actually pay the tax. And so there is a situation, you actually do pay the property tax first, and you get the rebate on the return. So there is an offsetting element going on, both a deduction and taxes based upon paying the tax initially and then getting the rebate.
Mr. Chairman,
and Representative Garofalo.
And just to be clear, we already pay the property tax. All the residents across the state of Minnesota already get these deductions. The mechanism you're putting in place, it doesn't affect that property tax level being paid. You are bringing in an additional income tax rebate. It's on the income tax form, correct?
Yes.
That is going to be a reduction in itemized deductions. So depending upon your tax bracket, either 15 or 25, even up to 39.6% of your rebate is not going to be returned to you because you're going to have an additional federal tax liability. Yes, I understand the property tax is a deduction, but taxpayers already get that. They're already paying their property taxes. The mechanism which you've chosen to give a refund to taxpayers is not one that this, on a bipartisan basis, Minnesota did with the sales tax rebate. Back during the Ventura administration, we deliberately did, well, I wasn't here, but I'm told that they did that deliberately to avoid this precise issue of we don't want to spend state resources to increase federal tax revenue for them. They just raised the payroll tax. They just raised income taxes. So, I guess, before I can get to the second question of asking you why you didn't do it that way, do you understand what I'm saying, that people are already paying property taxes? If the only way they would maintain those level of deductions is if property taxes went up by $500, which kind of defeats the purpose of the rebate. By providing an elimination of a deduction, you are transferring revenue from state coffers to the federal government. Does that am I right about that? I just want to make sure before I move on to the second part.
Commissioner, we're waiting for Representative Garofalo to move on to the second part.
Mr. Chair, Representative, remember, when you pay your property taxes in 2013 and you want to claim them on your federal return in 2014, so there is a deduction on your federal return for the $500 that you paid in 2013. That is on, you claim that as an itemized deduction on your 2014 income tax return. It's true that you have to turn around then and include the rebate that you're getting for that, but it's a net wash on the federal return because you're both deducting the $500 you actually paid in 2013, and you're also taking credit for the $500 rebate, so it's a wash on the federal return.
Mr. Chairman?
Reverend Garofalo, so, can you guys just step out in the alley and finish
actually,
this?
No, this is actually... First of all, I like the commissioner. I consider him a friend. He came down to Farmington and did one of his tax hearings. This is a very important point for the public because either accidentally or on purpose, you're stating it wrong. If there's a $500 increase in property taxes, then you're correct. There's no federal liability. But under current law, the property taxes I pay, I get a deduction for. I already get those. Like, for example, when I fill out for tax year 12, I'm going to get... He's telling you I'm right, is what he's telling you. I'll wait. In 2012, I paid my property taxes. Those will be an itemized deduction.
Let's say 2013.
Yep, so when I fill out my tax form, there's going to be my property tax deductions are already there. Now, if there was a $500 income tax credit there, my state liability goes down by $500. I am now taking $500 that's going to be added to my next federal income tax form. I will have a higher taxable income of $500. Now, depending upon what federal bracket I am at, that is going to result in the state expending resources to give them to the federal government. I mean, this is basic tax preparation that I know you understand, and I know the staff does, that depending, and we can, if you don't itemize, I don't think there's going to be any impact on federal liability or taking the standard deduction. But for those who itemize, part of this plan is to take state resources and distribute them in a manner that raises revenue for the federal government and does not provide benefit to the taxpayers. So I'll just get to my second question. Why didn't you just do a sales tax rebate?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, we considered a lot of different rebates in terms of whether it should be sales tax or property tax, but I'm afraid I have to go back to you on this point. So let's just take the very simple situation where I have a $500 property tax bill that I pay in 2013, and so then the only way I can get that deduction for paying those property taxes is on my federal return the next year in 2014, right? So when I file my 2014 tax statement, I'm going to get credit for real estate taxes paid in 2013. And so when I do that on the 2014 return, that's where I will get the deduction, but I will have the offsetting increase of the $500 rebate. It is a wash on the federal return.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, no, it is not, because what is happening is your state tax
on the state return.
On the federal tax return, your itemized deductions that you are putting there are being reduced by $500. So you have to account for that in your federal tax return. Your federal taxable income will go up by $500 on your 1040, which you will pay at either a 10, 15, 25, 39.6% rate. So the effect of this is that you are spending $1.5 billion of state resources. And let's remember, in the tax committee, we call revenue reduction spending. I know people don't like that, but that's the way the math works. You're spending $1.5 billion, of which a substantial portion of that, hundreds of millions of dollars, is not going to go to Minnesotans. It's going to result in additional revenue for the federal government. So I understand the state return, how it's neutral, but on the federal tax side, this proposal doesn't rebate all the money to taxpayers. It increases federal tax revenue. So why on earth, after the federal government just passed a massive tax increase, would we raise more money for them and do it out of our state coffers?
Commissioner, and then a follow-up question. What percentage of Minnesotans itemize roughly?
47%. I'm just getting right. No, it's not 47.
63% of statistics in committee are made up at the time.
About
45.
But Mr. Chairman, just to
okay.
About 45.
Well, let's let the commissioner. Thank you. So about 45% of Minnesotans itemize. Okay, so 55% don't, if my math is good. You wanted to respond, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the reason we looked at doing it this way in terms of whether you do it on the income tax return or you do it on the, let's say, the property tax statement, for example, if we tried to go through it that way. Part of the problem is we've all wrestled with this difficulty, the complexity of people understanding their property tax statements and who's taking a slice out of their money. We felt that it was really just a terribly difficult and complex way to try to get a property tax refund to citizens through the property tax statement or through some other mechanism. It just seemed like this was the most direct way that we could do it, and it's the most efficient way. There are some, you point out some other inefficiencies, but it just seemed like this was the most direct way to get that rebate directly to people in a way that they would understand and would have a direct connection to the taxes that they actually paid.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Groffel, last time.
Okay, but Commissioner, before I move on to my second question, I just want to make sure that we are correct, though, that this would result in additional federal tax liability. That's side of it. Not the state return. You're right in the state. That's a wash. But there is going to result in additional federal tax liability. It would be offset with lower state taxes, but part of these proceeds would go to the federal government.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, yes, I guess I was talking about the state return initially, but yes, you're correct.
Okay. So my final question, Mr. Chairman, this will be a much shorter question.
Representative Groffel, let's hope so.
Is this budget sets us up for government spending growing faster than personal income. That is an unsustainable math trend. Government spending at a faster rate than personal income growth. How does that end? What is the result of a budgeting process where government spending is growing faster than personal income?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The concern that you raise is valid, and we're all concerned about making sure that the government that we have in Minnesota is what we can afford. And the idea behind the governor's proposal is that we have been having government that we haven't really been able to afford, that we've been borrowing money to pay for it. We haven't really been upfront with the Minnesotans about how to pay for what we have. So this is a tough moment. And I think I'm the first one to admit that in many ways this is a heavy lift, in the sense of the governor's budget is an important step in saying, what do we want to spend money on? And when you all in your different committees go through the spending issues in terms of the education, infrastructure, health, you have got to make those hard choices. But the governor's choice has been that we need to make the spending commitments, because that's what Minnesotans want. And they want that in a way that's funded fairly and directly. So you raise an issue that I think we all have to face, is how do we meet that challenge to invest and do the things that people back in all the districts want you all to do, and do it in a way that's sustainable and enhances growth. And so the governor's plan, we think, does that. And so that's what we're trying to do.
I appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chairman, and I hope the committee and the public are more well-informed as a result of the commissioner and I's exchange here.
How could they not be? Representative Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Franz, I want to thank you for your leadership and the governor's leadership on putting this plan together. You know, the property tax reduction in this proposal is significant, and I think a game changer, because what the governor and you are saying right now is that, unlike what's happened in the last decade when we tried to balance the budget, is that we're not going to push the state's problems onto the backs of property taxpayers. And this is the first budget in a long, long time that hasn't said we're going to push more property taxes onto the property taxpayer. And it's significant. I mean, we're talking about $500 per homeowner. And, you know, when you break that down a little bit, I'm thinking now even along the border, but in rural Minnesota, that's about a 33% cut in property taxes. And right now, North Dakota, with its huge surplus, is looking at putting in about a total of $700 million into property tax relief. That will have a huge, significant, problem along the border, you know, Moorhead and Breckenridge and East Grand Forks and Dilworth and all those areas. Because right now, that's kind of the one advantage we have, is when you look at everything, the property taxes are lower. This would really be able to keep up with that, if in fact North Dakota does that. But also, it's also addressing a problem that we've had, and you indicated when you had your three-legged stool out and about, and I think I attended a couple of those meetings in the past year and a half. But, you know, since 2002, property taxes have gone up $4 billion. And while it's 80-some percent overall, when you dissect that down to homeowners, it's doubled. It's a 100% increase. And when you dissect that down to farmers, it's a 150% increase. And, you know, I'm looking at the demographics, and we know where they're going. In District 4B, 21% of the residents there are senior citizens. 21%. And that's where those property taxes have been falling on. And when you look at stability, and I know we're just going to talk property taxes here, but you have all the baby boomers into, you know, big earning years, moving into their retirement years, where their state spending or into taxes is much, much lower. And that's by broadening the base on the sales tax. Some of the other things you're doing is actually looking ahead into the demographics. And so I just think folks around the state have to step back and take a look at this overall plan and really what it does. Because as you've mentioned, it does put together into a package. But the property tax relief here is significant and very important. And one last comment I'd like to make is that when you look at job creators and you're looking into the future, you have to look at the investment side. Because we know, as you said earlier, in taxes, when you look at states around the union, those with the lowest taxes don't have the best economic development, and vice versa. And why do they locate? Why do we in Minnesota have more Fortune 500 companies per capita than any other state in the union, despite our cold weather? It's because we've invested in those things that employers really want, and that is a well-educated workforce. That's number one. And I think as a state, we should have a goal of having the world's best workforce. And this budget puts us on step to do that. The status quo does not. And so we can talk about a lot of different plans here, but we have one that actually moves us in the right direction and off of the status quo, which is not going to get us to the world's best economy or the world's best workforce. And so you have to look at those investments. And I thought I saw something when we talk about the price of government. You know, back about a decade ago, we were about 17.5% price of government. And that's how much we pay in state and local taxes versus our income. We're now down to about 15.5%. And I think this proposal still keeps us well below the 17% where it was a decade ago. And so just this idea that government is getting bigger in terms of the state and income, I just don't buy that. And I think we've seen the impact of us trying to tweak around the edges on everything and cutting certain areas in terms of where we're sitting in education and other areas. But so I applaud you for the package, and I know we can all look at various items and not like certain things or really like certain things, but I think you have to take it in its totality here. Members, and I know this, maybe this is more for tax committee, and looking at what it does overall, but it does set up the springboard to allow the state to invest in those things that are most important to its cherished goals into the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to get back to some of the data in the comments so we can kind of sort through some of this stuff rather than solely comments. Regarding the $500, in the information that I've read, it appears to me that seasonal recreational properties in greater Minnesota are included in the general business property tax levy. Is that correct?
Commissioner?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. I'm particularly concerned that these properties are not eligible for the $500 rebate as well. If you travel greater Minnesota, you'll see there's an inordinate number of lakeshore cabins for sale. And this is a problem that's driving down the values and the prices of lakeshore real estate and is a burden to all of those taxpayers. So that's not good for the economy of greater Minnesota. Secondly, with regard to the C-Corp rate reduction in income tax, it's particularly troublesome to me. I think that very much those of us in business clearly, like myself, understand without a doubt that probably, and I don't know what the statistic is, but I have to believe that a majority of the taxpayers in the business community are not C-Corps in Minnesota. I believe that, in fact, they're proprietorships, they're S-Corps, they're LLCs, and they're LLPs. And we're doing nothing to provide these people with incentives to grow these businesses and provide more jobs. Having a place at the table as a large company like Target or Cargill or 3M, they're all legitimate employers, but they have a place at a table, they have a voice, and they're getting C-Corp relief, while none of the small business people who are out there really trying to make a difference and survive and pay their property taxes are seeing no relief. So, you know, I'd like to see some fiscal impact on what it would mean if you took seasonal recreational property off of the general property tax levy. And I'd also like to see what impact it would do if you would reduce the rates for S-Corps, LLCs, LLPs, proprietorships, which flow through as ordinary income on their 1040s. I'm particularly troubled with a lot of the components of this expanding the base, contrary to my friend Representative Marquardt. There has been a long history in Minnesota, for those of us who are old enough to know, back in 1967 when we started a sales tax. You know, the whole mantra back then was it was going to be property tax relief. Then shortly thereafter, in 1981, we needed And through the 70s, we went through massive inflation where prices went up. That's a built-in inflation protector. And the revenue should have been there. And suddenly government has grown so much from this revenue, they can't balance it when the economy slowed down in the recession in 1980 after Reaganomics, and we put restrictions on borrowing capital, and the prime interest rate went up. Suddenly we had to raise the sales tax to 4%. With the promise that it was just temporary. Then in 1982, it went from 4 to 5%. Then in 1983, the sunset provision went away completely and the tax became permanent. You know, this is unacceptable to just keep growing government. I can assure every taxpayer out there that if we broaden the base and give this 20% reduction in sales tax to 5.5%, it'll be at 6 7/8 in no time flat. This is unsustainable. And the track that we're on, where we've got basically a state growth of 3% in our economy, and we're proposing 7.9% increase in taxes and spending, it's unsustainable. Most of us in business know you can't do that.
So, Representative Hertas, was there a question in there?
Well,
for the commissioner,
I was wondering why the seasonal recreational property is not business property. Why it's included in a general business property tax levy? It's not business property.
All right.
And then the S-Corp, LLC, LLP, no relief unless you're a C-Corp.
Commissioner, I think a history lesson, perhaps.
Mr. Chair and Representative, well, we believe there is relief for the C-Corps, the pass-through corps. I mean, first of all, there is property tax relief for the business property that they own. They also may get a $500 rebate on their own home. And they also, for 94% of small businesses, will not pay any additional tax under the fourth tier income tax proposal. So we think there's a lot in the package for small businesses. But the most important part for small businesses really is the investment in education and training. I mean, I think small businesses, from what I gather, really depend upon the university system, the MNSCU system, our educational system, to make sure we turn out the best qualified, the smartest students possible to take these jobs. Because as a former small business owner, you, and I know you know this too, the importance of your employees can't be overstated. I mean, they're the ones that make your product, deliver your service. You've got to make sure that they're healthy, they can get to work, and they've got schools for their kids. So, I mean, this whole network of how we're all in this together, I mean, the governor's package really is important in making sure that we fund those priorities that small businesses want just as much as big businesses. But I think I'll just end on the one particular note, and that is the current course is unsustainable. If we don't do anything, that's what's unsustainable. We have a $1 billion deficit. We owe the schools $1.1 billion, and we don't have any new investments in education or infrastructure. So the governor believes the current system is unsustainable, and that's why he's prepared the package that he has.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Well, I understand that aspect of it, and certainly the three-legged stool has been loudly touted as a way to bring balance back to making that stool sit straight. Being a carpenter, I own a saw. My first inclination would be to cut the other leg down rather than add into the other two.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thanks for the enlightening conversation. My question really kind of focuses back on reform within the property tax system. There was a property tax working group which submitted a report, which I assume, Commissioner, you have seen, that made a number of recommendations. I don't remember the exact number. I believe in excess of 20 different ways that they suggested that the property tax system be reformed. And I believe I heard the governor talking about reform at one time also. And instead, you've chosen this idea of the $500 rebate instead of enlisting any kind of reform within the system. Can you explain the logic behind that?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, thank you for the question. I think it's a difficult one, to be honest with you, because the working group put together a lot of good information, a lot of great recommendations, and I know that this committee will delve into some of those, and we're happy to be a part of that discussion. But frankly, the decision about whether to make the property tax rebate program or to dive into more structural reform simplification. As we all know, the system needs to be simplified. That debate was a hard one, but frankly, it came down to the decision that the first and foremost thing that we need to do is to convince Minnesotans that we can control property taxes, we can relieve the pressure on property taxes, and that once we get our budget in order and we have some surplus that we can spend more money on reform, we're happy to be a part of that discussion, and we're happy to have that discussion now. It's just that reform, as you know, Representative, is it can be expensive sometimes, and so if you take the reform measures and try to reduce some of the classifications, reduce some of the simplification, it can be very costly because of the fact that some people's property taxes, a lot of middle class people's property taxes, would go up. So it was a difficult decision. It's one we didn't make lightly, but we made one based on priority, and that was reducing property the reliance on property taxes first, and property tax reform simplification is certainly high on our list.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it just seems to me if you're going to invest $1.4 billion into the system, you could afford to make some reform. And I'll leave that at a comment. Another question, getting back to some of the inner structures of property taxes, we've seen, I'm a farmer, I own some land, we've seen dramatic increases in the property tax burden on ag land here in the state of Minnesota. Farming is a business, too. Where in your proposal is any relief for ag land?
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, obviously the homeowner, the $500 rebate for homeowners and farmsteads would apply to those folks who have homesteads or own their own farm and the farmstead. But I think one of the issues that we looked into in the agricultural business is that industry is doing fairly well right now, and there is pressure on farmers with the increasing values on property taxes, but we felt that in the current economy, that the exemptions that already apply in the farming industry in terms of equipment and various exemptions that exist, we felt that industry was adequately covered at that time, and we didn't feel a need to add any new changes to the farming industry. So we really chose to go after an opportunity for the farmsteads to receive the $500 rebate, but that was the extent of our reach into that in that industry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Lincheski.
I'll pass.
Thank you. Mr. Ouellette, this might be your chance. I'm not sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. I'm going to briefly describe the governor's proposal on changes to the local government aid program for cities. Let me start by talking a little bit about some of the shortcomings with the current formula. I've been in the process of putting together these recommendations. I'll talk about this in a minute, but the governor appointed a group of mayors, 15 mayors from around the state, to help us think about and talk about the local government aid program and challenges facing cities. Part of what we heard from them was some of the things that they had most concerns about with the current LGA program. And they are that it's too complicated. They have a hard time explaining to their citizens why their city gets the amount of LGA they get, why the neighboring city gets a different amount of LGA than their city does. And mayors, legislators, citizens, and even research directors at the Department of Revenue sometimes have a hard time explaining how the program works. It's unpredictable. Cities' aid can change based on changes in a lot of different factors. There's a lot of moving parts in the formula. And that feeds into the difficulty to explain how the program works. It's inadequate in a lot of their estimation. Program cuts and rising service costs have eroded the program's strength, and fewer cities receive LGA today than in 2002. And there's been growing concern over the last several years about how what money is in the program is going less to the older suburbs in the core of the metro area. So the percent losses in that part of the state are particularly significant since 2002. As I mentioned, the governor appointed an advisory group, 15 mayors, and the names of the cities are listed there. It was chaired by Mayor Rybeck of Minneapolis and Mayor Kleiss of St. Cloud, and they met seven times over the past, I guess it's 11 months, and our proposal reflects the hard work that they put in and the conversations that they had. So what did we hear from them? In short, what LGA should do in their estimation is to provide property tax relief, ensure the ability to provide core services, and they especially spoke most frequently about public safety and public works being sort of the heart of what cities do, although cities do a whole lot of good things. It should be reliable and stable, it should have an understandable formula, and it should recognize the diversity of cities. One of the things that you might notice in this list is that some of these goals are kind of competing and work against each other. The more a formula recognizes the diversity of cities in more ways, the harder it is to have a simple and understandable formula. So there's a tension between being sensitive to a lot of differences among cities and having a formula that people can get their arms around and understand. So a real quick outline of the proposal. Fewer formula factors, three instead of seven between the large and small cities' current formulas. We boil it down to three. We have what we hope are more intuitive factors than the current formula. People can look at them and understand the connection between the formula factors and cities' needs. It remains means tested, so that means that cities with more property tax wealth receive no aid as under the current formula. A broader distribution, it increases aid to the older suburbs and makes that aid a little bit more steady and reliable than it's been in the last several years. The current formula has had a lot of cities, not just suburbs, but especially some suburbs, on a bit of a roller coaster of blinking on and off the formula, getting aid, not getting aid over the last 10 years. So that's something we wanted to address. And it increases the appropriation by $80 million, which represents a 19% increase in the program, which would provide more tax relief in these cities. I'm not going to read all these, but here's a list of the current LGA formula factors. There are two separate need formulas, one for large cities and one for small cities. And between them, there are seven different data points that are used. In addition to these two need formulas, there's also side pots for small cities, regional centers, and jobs, and as well as a couple dozen special provisions for individual cities. Here's what the proposal is before you. Three factors rather than what you saw on the previous slide. The main determinant of need is a population factor that is based on public safety and street spending, and I'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. But this factor identifies need for cities that ranges from about $200 to about $500 per capita. There's two additional identifiers of need that attempt to identify conditions in some cities that would require them to spend more than the average city. There's a measure of tax-exempt property. We hear time and time again from city officials that that cities that have a lot of tax-exempt property have to provide additional services to properties that may bring in a lot of visitors or have a lot of activity on it, but doesn't provide any property tax revenue. Additionally, there's a need factor for pre-1970 housing percentage, and this is something of a carryover from the existing formula that has factors for pre-1940 housing. That factor has been in place since the 1993 formula, and we update it to use pre-1970 housing. And both the tax-exempt property and pre-70 housing percentage factors can give additional assign additional need to cities that ranges from $0 to $130 per capita. And I'll go into each of these factors in a little bit more in a minute. One of the main results one of the main differences between this need formula and the existing need formula is that the variation among cities gets smaller. The current formula has quite a range between the highest need that some cities get assigned and the lowest need that other cities get assigned. So this kind of complicated chart shows the blue dots, which is the need for across the bar is population. The blue dots is the need that the current formula assigns the cities, The red dots are the proposal. And I don't mean to overwhelm you with dots, but I think the point that's trying to be conveyed here is the bar is a lot tighter under the proposed formula. So what that means is that cities of similar size are much more likely to get a similar amount of aid than under the current formula.
Mr. Chair.
And as someone... I'm about to be interrupted.
Excuse me.
Just a quick question.
Representative Groffalo.
For the testifier. Were the colors of blue and red chosen for any other purpose other than the fact that they are good contrasting colors, or... That was just kind of a joke. You know.
Well, with Representative Groffalo with the white background, it's rather patriotic. Representative, or Mr. Willett, continue.
There was absolutely not meant to be any sort of subtle message there. I apologize. We'll change the colors. So the point is that, in my history of talking with cities, and I've been working on LGA for quite a few years, and one of the main conversations I've had with city officials over the last 15 years about LGA is, you know, I've got a city down the road that's very like my city. Why is our LGA so different? And I can't count the number of times I've had that conversation. And there are still important differences being picked up in this proposed formula. But the range of difference is much tighter, so you're less likely to have that conversation, and the differences won't be quite as extreme. So this chart shows the city 0 to 1,000 population. The next one is 1,000 to 20,000 population, and I would note that you'll see a lot of blue above the red in the 1,000 to 2,500 range, and there is a kind of a quirk in the existing formula. The way the existing small city formula measures population really assigns a high need to those cities in that population range. And so that's where you see the most significant difference between the need that's measured in our formula and our proposed formula and existing law. And then again, here's the same chart for the largest cities. So there are much fewer cities in the high population areas. But again, you'll see some tightening of the extremes.
Mr. Ouellette, one moment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Ouellette, has the state ever guaranteed increased LGA when they have increased the appropriation? Has that ever happened?
Mr. Ouellette.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think you're referring to the transition mechanism, which I'm going to get to in a little bit.
Okay, I can wait for you.
Okay. I will come back to that question.
Thank you.
So just to get a little bit more detail on the proposed formula need, so there's the three factors, and I mentioned the trade-off between sensitivity of a formula and simplicity. There's an additional one, which is a trade-off between stability and predictability of a formula. How much can a city be relatively certain of the amount of aid they're going to get into the future versus sensitivity to changing city circumstances? Do we want a formula where every year aid can change very dramatically based on changes in conditions in cities, or do we want gradual changes over time? And as with the fact that we tended towards the stability side on this trade-off that you have to grapple anytime you're coming up with the formula. So one of the things we did to enhance the stability of the formula is to have it be that only the population and the tax base are going to be updated on an annual basis, and the other need factors would require review by the legislature and sort of a reset push by the legislature to update those other factors. So that means that we're using a point in time to differentiate need for cities between the pre-70 housing and the tax-exempt property, but it really significantly increases the stability from year to year in the need for cities. So that's the need factors, and I'll just go through them each individually very quickly so you can understand how we got to them. The population need is the biggest determinant of need for cities. It's based on public safety and street spending, a three-year average of spending, 2008 to 2010, and we just plotted what the average city was spending in those areas against population, and we saw that as you get to larger cities, there's a higher average spending in these areas, which is sort of intuitive. Larger cities provide a higher degree of public safety services and have a higher spending on streets as well. So that gave us sort of a sloping up line of need per capita that gets bigger as cities get bigger, but it's based on actual city spending for a three-year period in these core service areas of public safety and streets. The rationale is that the state's interest is in ensuring that all cities can provide an average level of these important services. And as I said before, the need ranges from $200 to $500 per capita, depending on population. And this is three-fourths of the total formula need comes from this factor. So this is the big one for most cities. These line charts show that exercise we did where we plotted all the average spending, the red lines, and again we used red and blue, the red lines is the average of the city's actual spending for that three-year period, and the blue line is what we used for the formula. And the main reason that we had to adjust the lines was so that we did separate analyses for cities 0 to 1,000 population, which is the top bar, and cities 1,000 and up on the bottom bar. We had to make sure the lines met in the middle, otherwise we would have a sort of a cliff when cities cross that population threshold, which actually exists in the current formula. There's a pretty significant cliff, and there's a big chunk of statute that was put in a few years ago to help cities transition from being a small city to a large city and have their aid change slowly over time. By having the lines meet at the 1,000 population, we don't have to worry about that cliff effect. The second factor is tax-exempt property, and in our proposal, we're using the count of parcels that are exempt rather than the value. We do a survey of counties every 6 years to get data on tax-exempt property, and they send us information on all the parcels in the state that are tax-exempt. One of the concerns we had with the values is that a lot of tax-exempt property is the sort of thing that never sells on the open market, and it's really hard for assessors to put an accurate value on, and even harder for assessors in 87 counties to do it in exactly the same way. So to ensure that we have relatively comparable data across the state, we're using parcel counts, which isn't perfect because you can have a small parcel and a large parcel, and they kind of count the same in the formula. But rather than worry about the variance in assessment practices, which can be very significant with tax-exempt property, we're using tax-exempt parcel counts. We did exclude most of the municipally owned parcels, so they don't count because the cities have some control over how much tax-exempt property they hold. So it's just the non-city tax-exempt property that's included in the
factor. One moment, Mr. Willett. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Willett. So the thing that you said about small parcels and big parcels, would like the BWCA be counted as one parcel, or is that multiple parcels?
Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, if the BWCA were within the boundaries of a city, then it would depend on whether on how it had been platted out and stuff. The natural resource lands would be a bigger problem, but most of that land is outside of city boundaries. But there certainly is variance in, you could have two hospitals, one of which was built on a raised block that actually has several parcels that make it up, and another one that was, you know, built on before it was platted, and so you would get a difference there. So again, it's not a perfect measure, but we felt, looking at both the value and the parcel data, that the parcels were going to be a little bit more uniform across the state.
Representative Hertas, were you wanting to be recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding the LGA formulation, I'd like to point out that with regard to parcel counts, one of the real problems that are present in my own district that I represent, the cities of Minnetrista, cities of Independence, cities of Greenfield, they have about 11 to 12% of their total taxable capacity or acre base is consumed by Three Rivers Park District. In other areas around greater Minnesota, the Department of Natural Resources holds large pieces of land, but they get PILT money. They get payment in lieu of taxes. The communities in western Hennepin County get nothing. You'll also notice, according to your formulations, most of the communities in my district also get nothing. With regard to the local government aid and the formulas that are there, it just seems rather odd that we should have so many zeros in these metro cities where other communities are getting $500,000 subsidies. If you really want to provide property tax relief that we just finished a discussion, we ought to be providing money to the communities directly. We wouldn't have to tinker around with $500 credits because local governments wouldn't have to levy as much property tax to balance their budgets. So if you really want to have direct relief without the marginal compensating tax rates of filing a return and showing the $500 as income, I think that's a more direct way and a better way to provide relief to all residents and not just selected residents based on this parcel count and how old the houses are. All of the cities that I've mentioned have very large land masses. They've got a large amount of roads to take care of. They're subject to a lot of transient traffic and problems of people commuting from the more rural counties into the jobs in the center metro. There's traffic issues, there's maintenance issues, and these communities typically that I'm talking about are 1,000 or 1,500 rooftops that have to pay for all this stuff. And even though they're classified as high income, the burdens are high. And I can tell you as a past mayor there, the council chambers are filled if you try and ratchet these budgets up to take care of any of these things. There is a real need that's not being addressed, and the LGA is failing these communities.
Mr. Willett.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is true that there are a lot of cities that don't get LGA, and most of those cities would continue to not get LGA under this proposal. That is has less to do with how we measure need than how we measure ability to pay. In the existing LGA formula and in this proposal, we do compare cities both on how much spending need they might have and on what their local capacity is. And a lot of the cities in your part of the state have more tax base per person than other parts of the state. And that is the reason. That's not meant to satisfy you, but that's the reason the formula that works the way it does.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hertas.
Just one follow-up. I mean, one component that's not taken into consideration, these are classified as high-income suburbs, but I would mind you that these high-income suburbs also have typically a 39% marginal tax rate as opposed to a 15%, and I think that the income tax rates ought to be a consideration that mitigates some of this high-income issue, because when you get right down to the burden of households, we've got excess property tax levies for school initiatives and all of the things that we're not getting, and the burden is high, and we're starting to see a migration of people leaving.
Mr. Willett, let's see if we can keep going.
Okay. The 13 factor is pre-1970 housing. That's the percent of housing built prior to 1970 within the community. The rationale for having this is that older infrastructure must be replaced. Cities with older housing also generally have more poverty and higher public safety spending. Previous formulas used pre-1940 housing, but the maturing of the post-World War II suburbs indicates that maybe updating that factor makes some sense. There's a lot of when the pre-40 was put into the formula 20 years ago, so we thought we should update that factor. And that's how it works into the formula. Now, the transition period that Representative Erickson was mentioning, all 729 cities that received LGA in 2013 will receive a uniform $30 per capita increase in 2014. So that's immediate relief to all the cities that received LGA in 2013. In later years, changes in each city's LGA is limited to $10 per capita, and that cap is in the current formula as well. Reductions are also limited to $300,000. That's also in the current formula as well. So the transition mechanism and the appropriation increase mean no city's aid is less than 2013 aid for 3 or 4 years, depending on whether their population is growing. And the idea with the transition mechanism was partly a priority of getting a recognition that LGA cities have had a rocky go of it the last 5 years, with certification at one level and payment at another level, or cuts at the end of the city's budget year, and that short-term increase in LGA would help them to stabilize their budgets and get ready to move forward in what we hope is a more stable period into the future. And then phasing in the formula gradually is something that we've done in the past when we changed the formula. So having a gradual phase-in of a formula is nothing new. To Representative Erickson's question, the idea of putting a bunch of new money in and distributing it on a flat per capita basis has not been done in my time with the program. I can count on a couple of fingers the number of times this amount of money has been put into the program in the last 2 decades. So it's a small sample size of times that we could have contemplated doing something like this. There's a table in the handout that's just sort of selected pieces from the full run that you have a handout of. I just wanted to illustrate the examples of the impact. We also included 2002 LGA just as a reference point. It's a reference point that came up a lot in our discussions with the mayors. And one of the things that this shows is that since 2002, the change in LGA has not been uniform among cities, and that's part of the reason why we heard what we did from the suburban mayors. They and the central cities have seen a much bigger percent decline in LGA than many greater Minnesota cities. So what this chart shows is where they're at in 2002, where they're at today, and our proposal for next year and for 5 years down the road. And if you have any questions on the impact.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ouellet, I don't know if you can answer this because perhaps this was open to all mayors, but in the mayor's advisory group, I don't see any representation from cities and towns in East Central Minnesota aside from St. Cloud, which is a regional center, and we're the fastest growing area in Minnesota. So I think of Monticello, I think of St. Michael, Albertville, Princeton has grown, Zimmerman, Elk River, they've certainly grown. I mean, was this available to those mayors, or did they not decline, or?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll answer that one. One of the things that we tried to do was to open up the group as widely as we could in terms of big cities, small cities, regional centers around the state. And at the same time, we did want to limit it in terms of sheer number. So the 15 we thought we included was a really great representation of small cities and regional centers and all around the state. And so that's how we went about trying to select the 15 mayors.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm interested in the end game here, you know, what the results are after we've gone through this transition period. Have you done any charts on that or
Mr. Ouellet,
this very rough graph that we're looking at right now?
Mr. Ouellet.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have not done that in a way that we've shared with anybody. Internally, when we were coming up with the formula, we did some looking at that, but we don't have a run prepared on that. But
will we be seeing that information?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will we be seeing that information in committee?
That's certainly something we can provide, yes.
I'd appreciate that.
I expect lots more conversation when we get actual bills and language in front of us. Anything else?
Very
complete your presentation.
Okay. Just to wrap up, from the mayor's perspective, what we're proposing is a formula that's simpler, more predictable, and more stable. It has a broader distribution. The older suburbs receive more aid, and they can rely on it, which has not been their experience. It hasn't been most cities' experience in the last 5 years, but really stabilizes the revenue stream. And more tax relief, increase appropriation to reduce property tax reliance. So,
thank you very much.
Quick wrap up.
Commissioner, any closing words?
Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, I just want to say thank you for this opening session. I know there are a lot more, and we'll have a lot more questions. And do you have questions or more information, please get them to us, and we'll get them to you as quickly as we can. We look forward to answering your questions in any way that we can.
So. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. I just keep hearing this reference to a lack of stability in the last 5 years. It seems to me in the last 2 years it's been extremely stable.
Yes.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, as we talked a little bit earlier, I think the current course, the current situation is not sustainable, both in terms of looking at the state global situation on the budget side and looking at trying to make our partnership with cities and counties and townships and schools a partnership that works better for them too. So we would say that you can put predictability in by just eliminating or flattening out the aid, but we really want to see this to be a vibrant, healthy relationship with our cities and counties and school districts. So.
Thank you, with that, Commissioner. With that, members, the completion of the department's presentation of the governor's tax proposal, we will not meet tomorrow. We will take public testimony when we have bills and legislative language before us. Watch your emails. With that, ladies and gentlemen, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much.